Tomorrow morning, let it rain. Tomorrow morning, let it pour. Tonight, we're in the groove together. Ain't gonna worry about stormy weather. Gonna kick old trouble out the door. Beat out old trouble on the drum. Trouble on the drum, beat out old trouble on the drum, and kick old trouble out the door. Beat me that rhythm on the drum, beat me that rhythm on the drum, beat me that rhythm on the drum, and kick old trouble out the door. Kick him out the door, kick him out the door, kick him out the door, kick him out the
Australian Community Radio 3CR, streaming live on 3cr.org.au. My name's Joseph Toscano. My offsider, Henrietta, refuses to speak. She's ashamed to be the producer of this program, but she will take a photograph of the guest. She will podcast the program, but she will not talk. She doesn't even want her photo up. I don't know what she's done. Whether she's a bank robber or not, I got no idea whether there is outstanding warrants, but we accept all types here at 3CR. Hello, Henrietta. She's waving to the crowd. Now, you realise in life there are people you only use their first name and everybody knows them, like Madonna, Kylie. Well, we have one of those divas with us. We have Papuana. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Dr. Joe.
That's very kind of you. Have you ever been described as a diva?
No.
No, well, there you are. We'll do anything on this program.
Glad to hear.
Now, that's an accent, isn't it, I hear?
Sort of, yeah.
What do you mean, sort of? Where does it come from?
Well, my background is from West Papua.
West Papua.
Yes.
You know, most Australians don't know the difference between Papua New Guinea and West Papua.
So, West Papua is on the east west side of Papua New Guinea. So, still under Indonesian.
Uh-huh.
And the independent nation is Papua New Guinea. So,
So, you're an Indonesian colony.
Colony, yes.
Mm. So, what year were you born? You can lie if you want to.
Well, I'm no good at lying, so I'll tell you straight. And it was in 1989.
And were you born in West Papua?
Yes.
Where?
In Paniai.
Look, 99.9% of our listeners are not from West Papua. They wouldn't know where that is. Where is that, on the coast, in the highlands?
That's in the highlands of Papua.
In the highlands.
Yeah.
So there's Papua and there's West Papua.
Yes.
Right. And how many years did you spend there?
16 years.
16 years. And what was life like during that time?
It was up and down.
Mm-hmm.
Navigating the colonial systems.
Right. So how did it affect you as a young woman?
It's sad to see that, you know, you can't practice your own language due to colonial.
Right, so you couldn't practice your own language.
Yeah, to speak to your mob or your tribal people.
So what's your language?
Me.
That's easy. Yeah. Even I can remember
M-E-E,
that.
So me.
Me. And how difficult is it to learn?
If you practice every day, it's very easy, but if you like me, you have to baby step.
Baby step.
Yeah.
So, did you go to school?
I had education gaps.
Right.
Due to displacements. And
right. What do you mean by displacement?
Moving around, because my dad was one of the freedom fighters, so we have to keep moving places to places.
So he was a guerrilla fighter?
Yes.
and he was with his family.
Yeah, we have to.
And how many of you were there?
Me, my mum, and my older brothers.
Older brother. How many of them?
Three.
And they still with us?
No.
What happened to your older brothers?
It's very hard to describe when once you're part of the guerrillas movement, everyone is targeted.
Right. Yeah. So all of your brothers have been killed?
Yes. Whether through natural causes or intentionally, but yeah. Make it more, say, in a political way. I don't know how to describe it, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were basically living in a war zone.
Yes.
And the Indonesian troops, they were using what? Helicopters, jets, guns?
They're using helicopters. Mm-hmm. Up in Highlands back in those days, but I don't know, now these days they're using drones.
Drones, right. And what, they were using missiles? They were destroying villages?
Yes, in some part of Highlands, yes.
They were destroying villages.
Yes, and it's unfortunate because not many, media coverage of that happening.
There's nothing.
Yeah.
Because, as you know, the Australian government trains the Indonesian Kompasa troops here in Australia at Kanangra in Brisbane, outside Brisbane.
Yep.
They train them. They arm them. Yep. They train them. They support them.
Yep.
Yeah. And how does it make you feel that you know, everybody knows about Gaza and Palestine and Iran and Sudan.
Yeah.
And West Papua is what, 70 kilometres from our coastline? About 70 kilometres. There's been over 500,000 people killed since the 60s. And you don't even rate a mention in this country.
Yeah. How does it feel? Well, I feel sad that our land has been falsely taken.
Mm-hmm.
And Australian is, like, the government is blindsided because they have an interest due to part of BHP and Rio Tinto as a mining company, biggest gold copper mining in West Papua.
I mean, West Papua is an incredibly rich country, not just in terms of minerals, but in terms of forests, which have been deforested, in terms of sea, food, fish. Yep. It's like paradise on earth.
Yes, it is. And as a West Papuan, I will say, why God give us all these things? And while we are not enjoying it, then other people are enjoying and killing the native West Papuans.
Right. So did you get any education as far as high school was concerned?
No.
Nothing. So you're 16.
Yes.
It's nine. What, you were born in 89, you said.
Yes.
That's right. So that makes it 2005.
2006.
Oh, God, my.
So I come here.
Now, hang on. No. Hang on. We've got to build this up, Papuana. You don't tell them everything at once. All right. So you're 16.
Yes.
You're the daughter of a guerrilla fighter.
Yes.
Your family's been murdered.
Yes.
Members of your family, your brothers have been murdered by the Indonesian authorities. You haven't been able to get an education. So what happened in 2005?
Well, my dad and other political leaders organized boat, or they call it traditional outrigger canoe.
Right. So they didn't hail a ferry or what? They built an outrigger canoe.
One of the elders built them in Ambai Island.
Right.
In Serui.
Right.
And they organised all the guerrillas, the family members.
Right.
So most of them are young. They wonder who's still alive.
Right.
To escape West Papua.
So they were basically trying to ensure the future for the independence movement and the country.
Yes, and as well as... bring awareness what's really happening in West Papua,
right.
As not many nation know about that.
Right.
What's going on? So
you're 16.
Yes.
You're a young girl. you're, I should say a young woman, you're in the highlands.
Yes.
You've got to get to the coast.
Yes.
There are Indonesian troops everywhere in roadblocks.
Yes.
What was that journey like?
It was terrifying.
Tell us what happened, yes.
It was like you have to, every second, you have to watch your back. You have to, who you were going with, what you have to do, you have to watch your. Even you go to bathrooms, you're like, okay, you have to be awareness. Yeah.
So if you would have been caught, it's quite likely you could have been shot. You would have been shot.
Probably slow torture.
Slow torture. Yes, people forget it's not just about dying. It's about the fact that the Indonesian government and the Indonesian military authorities use torture commonly.
Yeah.
Every day when people are arrested.
Yes.
It is part of the way they can. So did you walk from the highlands down to the coast?
No. I did meet the coastal area. So I flew to nearest main city.
Right.
And then meet the boat. So the imagine this. You and the boat is go run so on the top of a island and yep. then go run in the front and come back down.
Right.
So they I have to meet them on the bottom side of it.
Right.
So from there, I took a boat to Merauke. Yes. So I have to meet them in Timika.
Did you make this journey by yourself?
Yes.
All by yourself?
Yes.
Had you travelled out of the highlands before?
Not really.
And what And you only did you just speak your traditional language or did you speak some Indonesian?
Yeah, we have to practice Indonesian language right. to communicate due to, you know, ongoing colonialism. So
right.
Yeah.
So you knew enough to get by?
Yes. You have to learn the language to communicate with the right. wider society.
Right. So during this journey from the highlands to the boat, were you questioned at any time or was it quite...
We've been followed a couple of times.
Followed, yeah. Right. Why would they follow a 16-year-old girl?
Because they know that who is when you when they know that you who's your family members.
Yes.
You that's naturally come that you'll be
followed. You'll be followed and you'll be watched.
Yes.
It's not enough they kill and torture and kill your family members.
Yes, they but, did.
And they continue to follow you, hound yep. you. Yep. So do you think this is just the military or government policy?
Because for me it's government run by military, so that's the
difference.
That's the difference.
Right. And now that their general is back in charge, it's a yes. different matter. That's right. All right. You finally found this boat.
Yes.
What did you think when you saw the... Was it day or night when you finally found the boat?
It was in a day, and yes. I look at the boat, and I was like, oh, my God. Do I have to go in this thing?
Right. So describe the boat for me.
The boat is traditional Melanesian outrigger.
Outrigger, right.
Yeah, so...
Made out of a large tree trunk.
Yes, and no, like, you know, no fancy models or fancy whatever it is. It's natural. And I'm imagine, you know, getting in there and then you imagine that you're going to meet a lot of people. Yes. And I'm like, you're thinking ahead, what's going to happen?
How wide is this traditional canoe? Is it a meter? Is it enough for two people to sit by side?
No, it was... Enough for 50.
Did you sit by side by enough room to sit side by side?
Well, you have to squeeze.
Squash, yes.
Into right. small, so you have to just stay in one spot and not moving.
So you had 50 people?
No, on that time we have under 15.
15.
Because we are meeting the rest of the people in Merauke. Right. So this is in Timika.
Right. And so how... Is the canoe powered by human power or an outboard motor or both?
Both. We have a motor.
Mm-hmm. So, we'll talk about that later on. I've yes. heard the story about the brilliant motor. All right. Okay, so here you are. You're 16. you see this outrigger canoe. Do you know anything about where you're going?
No.
They didn't tell you?
They didn't tell me. They just, my dad just told me that. He said, do not bring any clothes, do not bring anything. Just bring for like 3 days clothes.
That was it?
That was it.
And did your dad remain behind?
Yes.
Right. Is your dad still alive?
Unfortunately, no.
What's happened to your dad?
He, a couple of days before he got murdered, I end up calling one of the auntie, and I was unfortunately talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he warned me that he been followed.
Right.
He had this feeling that he been followed entire week.
Yep.
And then week later, I hear that he's got an accident, the motorbike ran over him.
Right.
However, it's not what it is.
No. And your mother, is she still alive?
She is, yeah.
She's still in West Papua?
She's still in West Papua.
All right. Have you got any family, aunts and uncles in West Papua?
Entire my family in West Papua, yes.
So when you came here, you were the only person from your village?
Yes.
Okay. It's hard to imagine the suffering you've been through. It's hard to imagine. I don't think people can imagine having their immediate family members murdered.
Yeah.
You know, as because they want a little bit of self-determination, some independence, and that's their crime.
Yes.
Now, when the boat was full, you got to, was it?
Merauke.
You got there and you filled up the boat?
No.
No? What happened next?
So we end up left Timika, and on the way there, we kind of ran out of petroleum.
Excuse me, you haven't left West Papua and you've run out of petroleum.
Yes. And we stuck in, they call Yesuraso Island.
Right.
In between Merauke and Timika, there's one little island that's separate from the mainland.
Right.
So we stuck there for nearly 2 weeks.
2 weeks? And you weren't discovered?
We got discovered by this local chief's son.
Uh-huh.
So he come and approach us and he said, hey, how you got, like, do you need help?
Right.
But first we were like worried about it. He might be, you know,
one of the spies
and all the stuff. And we're like, no, we give it to God.
Right.
To decide whatever it is. And we approach.
I don't think God will give you petrol.
Sometimes you have to think positive. All right.
Okay. Give it to God. So where did the petrol eventually come from?
So we have to, what's called, windsurf?
Windsurf,
yeah. Windsurf up.
Yep.
Yeah. Sail.
Sail
up to, there's nearby town, little town.
Right.
So we went up there and everyone, like when we arrived there, I don't know, somehow we docked the boat near the Navy, like the military camp the area.
Good.
So we're like, good.
Just as you do,
from nada to nada.
Yeah.
And one of the elders told us, do not say anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just say that we are going to have a marriage
ceremony
into the next town.
Right.
So we are coming from the up to bring this boat as a gift, as a traditional,
right
gift.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, okay, we just do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we stayed there for one night and one day. Two days and one night.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day, one of the pastor, he was so kind. He helped us out to buy all the, because we don't have a cash with us.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to go to the mine town that went in Merauke to get the money. So he helped us refill everything. And then we go to Merauke and refine his soul. Stop back to him and meet the rest of the
people. So did you know anybody on the boat?
No.
Nobody.
Apart from the one of our leader, Herman Wangai.
Right.
Yeah.
And apart from one guy, did anybody, Herman, one guy, did anybody else speak your language?
Yes, there's one of those older brothers. Yes, they did.
They did. And how many people, say under 20, were on the boat?
Around 28.
Of the 50.
Of the 43.
43 at this stage. 43. Yes. And division between men and women?
Men more than women, so we're like 7 or 8.
7 or 8 women.
Yeah.
Right.
So hang on.
What did you think?
6 probably, yeah.
6 women.
Seven women.
Including
the little person.
Excuse me, what do you mean little person?
The little young girl that with us.
And how old was she?
She was like 4 years old.
4 years old.
The youngest was 2.
2. So we had women, children,
yes.
Men.
Women.
And you had elderly people?
Yes. There were a couple, yes.
Right. Okay, so did you have somebody who was responsible for the engine?
Yes, that was my dad.
Your dad?
That who apparently bought the motors.
Right.
But we have someone that who's in charge for engines.
Right.
His name is Yunus.
Right.
And he's the one looking after the boat while we're on the way here.
Right, okay. Yeah. On the way here. I like that. Now, obviously, you had passports and visas, didn't you?
No.
No?
I wish to think, yes, you have a visa, passport and all the, you know, green lights, but no, unfortunately.
No. No passport,
no passport,
visas.
No nothing. You're only your life.
Only your life. And did you have enough food?
No. So, do you want me to explain?
Yes, explain, please. Please explain, as our friend says.
So, as we were in Merauke, we met up with the rest of the groups, and first night we all want to make a run for it.
Mm-hmm.
We got chased on the beach by Indonesian border patrols and
right. The
rest of the spies and all the stuff. So we have to run to the bush
mm-hmm. And
then come back out again around 2 a.m., and then we're getting into the boat, and they said, like the leaders said to us, do not bring food because that'll be a 6-hour journey.
A 6-hour journey.
From Merauke to Australia.
To
so
Australia.
They're thinking about like Torres Strait.
Straight across.
Straight across.
They thought they were going to cross the Torres Strait, did they?
Yeah, I think so. That's why 6 hour. So apparently 6 hour journey from there to here.
That's right. It's only 3 kilometres from Sabai to the Papua New Guinea, so they didn't even have a map.
No map.
No map, no compass?
I think they have it, but I didn't see it as a feasible.
Right.
It's there, but we have a star as a mass.
What do you mean?
The star, you know, the natural.
Natural, so you're using the stars
to navigate.
Now, how long did this 6 hour journey take?
6 hour turned out to be 4 days and 3 nights in the sea.
On the sea.
Lost.
And did you have any life jackets?
No, nothing.
No food, no life jackets.
No, nothing.
I assume there was a lot of praying.
Yes.
Right. Yes, because West Papuans are very religious people normally.
Yes, we are. We are. I think we have a big. We are big believers.
Mm-hmm.
We are as a Christian nation.
Yes.
So.
Did you think you were going to die?
Yes. Or you just surrender because when you see the wave is highest as this building, you just small aspect down there.
Right.
So you just, you know what, God, we are ready.
Right.
Turned out to be God.
It was on your side.
It was on our side.
So you've got big waves. And obviously the engine worked perfectly.
No, the engine broke first night.
First night the engine broke down. Right. No engine, no food.
No, nothing. No navigation. And remember, this is in January, so that's monsoon season.
Yes, the monsoon, yes.
So that was you battling with that at the same time.
Right.
So the wind and the wife is fighting against you.
Right.
So, yeah. And then no water, no nothings.
No water either.
No water either. Remember, we need to travel for 6 hours.
6 hours, no water, right.
No.
Just out of interest, how deep is this canoe? Would it be, what, a foot?
Probably, yeah. Not that big.
It's not that big.
Not that big. It's just like in a normal Melanesian
boat,
not that deep.
It's not deep at all.
Not deep at all.
But you're in the ocean.
And then we're in the ocean.
You're in the ocean, and yet this waves are smashing down onto the canoe.
Yes.
Did you have anything to bail the water out, to push?
Yes, one of the brother, he did volunteer to bail the water out. And then because the rest of us, we don't have the energy straight away, you know.
No.
And then squish.
Yes.
Squishy plies, and you can't even move because we need to balance the boat. If we're more heavy on the other side, you're tipping into
the sea, and you got no life jackets.
No life jacket, no nothing. Right. So you have to balance the boat, who stay on that side, who stay on that side, and then who's going to go. So,
I won't ask boring things like toileting, but that's...
Oh, don't worry. You lost interest on that because you didn't eat.
Yeah.
So you got nothing to pass down. You got nothing.
Nothing, right. When you said you pray, did you pray as a group or both as individuals and as a group?
We did both.
You did both, right.
We did both because everyone had coming from different dominants.
Right.
So
denominations, And was there any singing?
Yes. We all sing in Papuan worship songs.
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay. So it's a very strong bond you're creating in the face of... deaf, basically.
Yes, and here we are, 20 years later.
Yeah, but we haven't finished yet. We haven't got to the coast of Australia yet.
Okay.
All right. So when did you see land? What did you feel when you saw land in the distance?
So I was sitting next to one of the sister,
mm-hmm.
and the boys called it out, there's a land. But I'm like, nah, they're just joking because we just probably has a lot. Yes. And then they're like, no. So they went and swim.
They swam?
They swam.
Through the shark-infested waters?
Oh, more like fresh crocodile waters.
Yeah, fresh crocodile. So you got to land.
Yes. Right. They're like, let we go and check it out.
Right.
Where are we?
Right.
Because we were thinking, oh great, we're going back to Papua.
Right. You've gone in a circle.
And we're just going to circle, and if we're back in Papua, that means, you know.
Jail.
Jail or other things.
If you're lucky, you get jail.
Yes. Yeah. So the boys want to make sure, so they swam across the ocean to the near shore.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw, do not swim.
Do not swim.
Croc infested waters. And the Australian government, so they're like, either they want to joy or they want to cry. They're just like, we're here. I was like, okay, we're here, but where are we? Because we couldn't hear them.
Right.
So they're like, no, come this way. So we getting in there, and while we navigating to the nearest shore, one of the sister told me, like, if we're back in Papua, this is what I'm going to do. We're going to cook big pot of rice, two of us gonna eat like that. We never ate before. I was like, that sounds good.
Right. Yeah. So everybody gets off the boat.
There's a little river that meets ocean. So we go through that river to navigate in, and then we got off the boat, and everyone was like, Phil, you know. Or like a tipsy, not tipsy, your ocean, you didn't.
Yeah, they haven't stretched their legs, they haven't got up.
Yes. And then we just suddenly standing up and...
feeling dizzy.
Feeling dizzy and all the other hungries, and you don't have energy to move. And we were lucky that where the place, I think they use for camping.
Camping? It was a camping area.
Camping area, but I was out in a remote area.
All right. Okay. When you say remote, what did the area look like? Was it full of trees and coconuts?
No, it was
dead.
Dead.
Right.
Dead, like mangrove.
Mangroves, right.
Yes.
Right.
Mangrove, but it was nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. You can't hear anything.
And I assume Border Force was waiting and waving, or there was nobody there.
Oh, nobody there.
Nobody there.
Nobody there.
This is north.
This is in Weipa.
Weipa.
Yeah.
How far away were you from Weipa?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
How many kilometers do you think you were from Weipa?
I don't know. It's like not. It was Weipa. It was like Mapun.
Around there, yeah. So there was nobody.
Nobody there.
So what did you do?
So what's happened is the boys, the older boys, because we were like underage, the minority, so we just like, they're like, all the young kids stay in one spot, do not move around.
Right.
So we all stay in one spot, but the older brothers, they just went out and finding, and luckily they found this coconut.
Right.
They're already ripe, ready to planting.
Yes.
Their baby coconut.
Yes.
But you can still eat them because they're not that really grown. So they open it up and we make bonfire. But before everything, we sat down in like yarning circles.
Mm-hmm.
We pray that thank God to, we arrived safe and sound.
Mm-hmm. So nobody died in the trip.
No,
that's remarkable.
We were lucky,
even with very small children.
Yes.
Mm. So, how long did it take Australia's finest and best patrols to find you?
The next day.
Next day.
In the around 2 o'clock.
What happened?
Because one of the the small airplane.
Yes, they spotted you.
They spotted us.
Yes.
And I think they called them.
Right.
I think they...
They said, there's people here.
There's people here. Do you know them?
They don't look like Aborigines.
No, they're not. But we have this... if you go in Google, we have this banner.
Yes. Oh, you had a banner.
Banner what up it, in a boat.
And what did the banner say?
I forgot about that.
No.
But yeah, we have put our Morning Star flags up.
Up. So you put flags up.
Yes.
Well, you could have taken Australia for West Papua like we did. We took it from the Aborigines when Captain Cook put the British flag and said, this belongs to Britain. You could have put up the West Papuan flag and said, this belongs to West Papua.
Yeah, but we're not that naive enough.
You're not nasty enough.
We're not nasty enough because we're still fighting for our own. Why we want to make other people having that same issue that we're having.
Exactly. So obviously, how many of these border guards turned up?
I think whole Navy.
The whole Navy turned up.
They turn up and immigration come later on.
Yes, they said, where's your passport? Where's your visa?
Everything, where you're from, and we don't know English.
Right.
Know nothing.
Right.
This is you're doing something very bad and suddenly they said you like you're a criminal.
You're a criminal. All right. So you were treated like a criminal.
As a young person, what I was thinking. Like, we're coming from Nala and here we go again, kind of like that.
Right. And so were you arrested at that stage or were you taken somewhere as a group?
We all, after that, when the first Navy come and then they waited until immigration comes. So immigration come and they bought a food.
They bought you food?
Yeah.
Right.
And guess what?
Guess what? What?
It's salad.
Salad.
And not many Papuan eat salad.
So there's no sago.
No, nothing.
No cassava. No rice.
No, nothing. So it was culture shock, salad with Cantonese. And they're like, this is fish. And they're like, this is not fish.
Canned fish.
And they're like, this is fish. And
All right.
So that was first encounter.
Right. First encounter, I like that. It's like in was it 1596 when the Dutch ship had the first encounter with Indigenous Australians, exactly the same area where you were. Do you know that?
No.
That was where the first encounter was. And what the Indigenous the First Nations people did is they killed two of the sailors and the ship went off.
Wow.
But let's get back. So did they take you somewhere after that?
Yes, they did. They took us to nearby shelter, I think, shelter or like community hall.
Right.
So they put us there. So they drove us. So yeah. Immigration come with their fancy four-wheel drive.
Right.
Toyota Land Cruisers.
Did they separate the young people from the older people?
Yes, they did. They separate women, men.
Mm.
Until we nearby the town.
Mm-hmm.
They search again, like strip search.
Strip search. You're all strip searched. Yeah. You must have had. You may have had machine guns.
I don't know.
You could have been invading Australia. You know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But luckily,
this is during the Howard era when boats were the big issue.
Yes.
We will determine who comes to this country.
Yes.
We don't want any West Papuans because they're our near neighbours.
Yes.
So how long were you kept? Obviously, after that. Everybody was kind to you.
No. So this is what happened. So they, after the strip search us.
Yes.
And then they took us to nearest town, like a community town hall or something.
Yes.
They kept us there. And then the next morning, they're like, okay, eat breakfast. We're taking you somewhere.
Oh, okay. Oh, good.
And then we're like, oh, where are they taking us? Yeah. Kind of like, and then we end up in hospital.
Hospital.
Medical checkup.
Medical checkup. Make sure you haven't got any
disease,
tuberculosis especially. Yeah. All right, you had your checkup.
We did checkup, and then they're like, we're not going back to place that we were in this morning.
Right.
And we're heading to airport.
Oh, they're going to give you a nice free flight.
And then here we are. This is me thinking like, okay, we're going to airport. Where are we going? And then looking at... you know, the Hercules.
Hercules. Yeah. So it was an
Army aircraft. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Right.
It's trauma. Like, you know, when that in Papua, that's meant it's bad thing going to happen.
Yep.
And then they're like, we're moving you to different place. I don't understand, but this is one of the elders.
Yes.
Like, speaking, but, you know, step by step as a broken English as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you guys moving to different place. And guess where they sent us?
I know where they sent you. It's where Santa Claus lives.
Yes, Christmas Island.
That's right. So the whole 43 were sent to Christmas Island. Babies.
Everyone.
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 And how were you treated at Christmas Island?
When we arrived in Christmas Island, it was like 8 hours or 10 hours.
Yes.
From...
where you were.
From where we were, yes. Mm. And then when we arrived there, we were divided to groups.
Right.
And they're like women and children in one side.
Yep.
And then men and 18 and above one side.
Yep.
And they're like, you guys going in this group.
Yep.
And this guy's going in this group. Mm. And we were separated.
Right.
So we were lucky that they gave us like a community in the community within the community, but houses.
So you weren't actually put in the
detention center?
Yeah, I don't know if it'd been built yet.
They were building
it. They were building it, yeah.
So they don't have enough space for us. So they put us nearby like accommodation.
Right.
However, all the young men 18 and above, they end up in detention center.
In the detention center, yes.
So, we stayed there for nearly 3 months.
3 months. That's when negotiations were taking place here in Australia. I mean, there were West Papuans here who were negotiating on your behalf.
Yes.
The only good thing is that I think the immigration minister was Amanda Vanstone, if I remember correctly. And I know Howard's very intent on deporting you back to...
Yes.
And that's a fear you faced every day for those 3 months.
Yes. We encounter, like, while we live there, Indonesians were coming to the place and the journalists were coming and then we were under 24-hour security. So even we're still outside of a detention centre.
Right.
So I think that was... I think we were lucky to have that kind of security while we were there.
Yeah, because the Indonesians were trying to get you back to West Papua. Because they were lobbying very hard.
Oh, they took the embassy back to Indonesia for 3 days.
That's right.
I think.
Yeah, they recalled the ambassador from Australia because they were unhappy that the Australian government Look, I could be wrong, but I understand if it wasn't for Amanda Vanstone that you would have all been deported.
Yes, that's why I think we are blessed with her advocating for us, for minority, like the young peoples, and like advocating for West Papua as a nation as well. Yes,
I mean she's a religious woman. She was the ambassador in the Vatican at one stage. So,
wow.
Yeah, so did you ever meet her?
I did.
Where was that?
At my foster mum's house.
Right.
So, yes, she did come. Yes, she did come and meet me, and this is Amanda. Finally had to meet, and I was so privileged to have the opportunity, because I know, you know, when you're in this stage of government, it's very hard to meet people. So.
Well, it is, and the fact is that she did put her neck out.
Yeah.
And a lot of people say she paid a political price for keeping the 43 here in Australia.
Yes.
I know a lot of people have a negative opinion of her because of, but in this situation, she did what she felt was the correct thing to do.
And I'm forever grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. Now, after the 3 months, what happened to the 43?
Well, they flew us to Melbourne.
Melbourne?
Yes.
Why Melbourne?
Because one of our leader is live in Melbourne, so we thought that might be good idea to come to Melbourne.
Right.
So that's everyone has the same access and some
Well, I'm very interested in what has happened to the 43, because you've been here now over 20 years. This is your 21st year, isn't it? So you've made a life for yourself in Melbourne.
Yes.
You've got husband, children?
Yeah, I got husband. I got three kids. I've been blessed.
Right. And you're working, I understand?
Yes, I'm working full-time, yes.
Can you tell us what you do, or you prefer not to?
Well, I work for non-profit organisations.
Right,
So it's not like, it's as well as like, as the education support,
Education support. Not everybody of the 43 has done as well, have they?
In a way, yes, but in a way, they're trying.
They're trying, yes.
To navigate, it's not easy.
It's very hard. You come to some, I know, had education. I think six of the younger men were sent to Ballarat.
Yes.
Where they got an education.
Yeah, those ones who come before us.
They were before you, were they?
Yes.
They were sent to Ballarat. So you said you were in a foster family.
Yes.
So what happened? So if you were young, you were put in a foster family,
Yes, most of us who is under 18, we were put it into foster family, yes.
Right. And were they religious? Was it a religion or just religious-based?
They're very religious. Not very, but like they believe God is there.
Yeah. And do you still have contact with your foster family?
Yes, until now, yes.
Until now, right. Yeah. And what type of work have some of the others have found that, you know, that you still have contact with?
Sorry, could you repeat?
The other 42.
Yeah.
Are they still in Melbourne, or they've moved all over Australia?
They move all over Australia. Some of them, mostly the older brothers, they, because has to find jobs and supporting all the other things, but
They've moved to different parts.
Different parts.
Is everybody still alive, or have anybody died?
We have one just recently, end of last year.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is, he passed away like 7 years ago.
7 years ago.
Yeah, due to cancer.
Right, but I assume nobody's gone back. I mean, to live.
To Papua?
Yeah, West Papua.
There's like when we were here first or second year, there's four of them went back to
Papua.
They
went back. And what
happened? For good.
And what happened to them?
We don't know.
You don't know?
Because that's not, that's their choice.
Yeah, they're homesick, were they? Or their pressured family were put under pressure for them to come back?
I don't know, but whatever their decision were, probably they know what they're doing.
They went back. All right.
Because I was that age, you know, when you were young, you just...
Right.
They're more, some of them are more older than me, so...
Yeah. So Have you had any contact with your family since you've been here in the last 21 years?
I did. It's like I spoke to my mum through other people's, but yeah.
Right. And you can't speak to her directly?
No.
Right. Okay. Now, a lot of people in this country, and I assume the rest of the world, think there is no active resistance to the colonisation, that, it, you know, all the guerrillas have been killed, there's nothing happening in West Papua, you're all being assimilated and integrated into Indonesian society. Is that correct?
That's how people think.
That's where they are. That's why I've got you here. I want to know what the reality is.
In reality, as I was mentioning before, not many media go there to coverage what's really happening. That's why it's not much information coming out here. And then if something happened, the Indonesian government shut down all the internet or right. all the other things that connect to technology.
Right.
So it's make life harder to get the information. And I don't blame the people. You know, they think nothing happening, but in reality it is.
Yes, because
it's slow genocide.
Well, sometimes it's slow and sometimes it's rapid. I understand that the one of the guerrilla leaders was killed in October, one of the major major fighters.
Yes.
And there are still fighters in the highlands conducting a guerrilla campaign.
Yes.
Because the other thing I found extraordinary is that there are 250,000 Indonesian troops in West Papua. That is one soldier for every adult West Papuan male.
Yes.
That's extraordinary.
It's like you're going, like you're watching the movie, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the movie, like us, when I was growing up, my dad used to talk to me, whoever the, from Timor after Timor got independence, those military, they deploy straight to West Papua.
Yes, yes.
So it's nothing left, not going, no one going back to Indonesia, wherever they're coming from.
Yeah.
And now they deploy more every year.
Every year, yeah.
Every year. And then I don't know why they what they're fighting for, you know, because in as an indigenous West Papuan, we don't have that fancy military equipment to fight them.
That's right. Well, they've been. I understand over the last few years they've been using jets, they've been using missiles, they've been using drones, they've been using flamethrowers, and, then there's the arbitrary arrests, torture, disappearance, people jailed.
Yeah, and they using gas.
Gas now.
Gas to, like, when you're breathing in and then all the young little kids.
Yes.
I don't know if you're aware of, but, like, they get suddenly sick and vomiting and all that things. And
vomiting, yes.
So, yeah. And then...
Yeah, but we don't hear one word from the Australian government.
No.
Not one word. I'll tell you a story. I've said it before on this program. There was a senator, he was a DLP senator, he's now dead, this is about 10 years ago, and a European woman who was a West Papuan activist in Darwin was killed in a road accident, right?
Yep.
And he wanted a condolence motion in the Senate. And both the Liberal Party and the National Party and the ALP, the three of them, joined together to prevent the condolence motion being read because the word West Papua was used in the condolence motion. That's how difficult it can be.
Yeah.
Do you think the West Papuan office that you use is of any use?
Yeah.
You think it's useful?
In a way. Mm. Yeah. It's as long as what I believe, as long as we bring the awareness.
Yes.
To other people to know about that we're still fighting for what our right is and self-determination. As long as people are aware, there is a place that you can access. There's if you need more information, there's resource that you can find, come and see and all this stuff.
Yeah.
That's something rather than you know it and you're not doing it.
You're not doing it, that's right. I mean, when I first met the West Papua people here, I mean, they didn't actually have an office, but I think the other thing, reason it's important is it allows coordination worldwide because you've got the World Wide Web now and it makes it a lot easier to bring people together. And because Herman Wonga, he's still in New York with the United Nations, or has he moved on?
I think he's in somewhere in the United States, but United States, I don't know.
What he's doing.
Yeah, what he's doing. Right. But probably still advocating for West Papua and all deep down, yeah.
Now, I understand there's what's called a West Papuan community group.
Yes.
Can you tell us about that?
So West Papuan community group is, it's like we call it family.
Right.
So we are not big community in West, as a West Papuan.
And there aren't thousands of you in Melbourne.
I like to wish that happened one day, but it's not.
No.
We probably like under some, you know, you can count.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's us. It's a community, but it's neat community. It's close, and it's something that we always looking forward from home and away. You know, home that you can go to,
right?
And you can have the connections. Everyone have a discussion, have a yarn, and
yarn, yes.
And then share the experience. What? Because everyone having the similar situation and experience.
Mm. Was there any? Has the group got together?
Yes.
What, do you do it yearly or?
We do it monthly.
Monthly.
Yes. Yeah. So it make us that connect more what's going to happen. It's about talk about, you know, all right, if we went bring food, say, sit down, have a laugh, have that connection. So forget about whatever, you know, Monday to Friday you did work.
Yeah.
It's about family time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's extraordinary. This is an extraordinary Australian story.
Yeah.
It's an extraordinary Australian story, which most people aren't aware of. Now, in this country, you can do movies about garbage week in and week out. Has anybody approached the group regarding doing a documentary?
I think some might be, but it has to be collective.
Yes.
Because we believe collective approach than individualism.
Right. So what you're saying is if anybody's interested in going ahead with a documentary, they need to interact with the collective.
Yes.
Well, that makes sense. It was a collective endeavour to come here.
Yeah.
And you had the same collective negative experiences.
Yes.
So, you know, it does make sense. Yeah, because it's just an extraordinary story, which more Australians, I think, should be familiar with. It's I hate to use the word, the R word. It's a story of resistance and resilience.
Yeah.
Extraordinary. At 16, to go through that. Do you ever discuss it with your children? How old are they?
One is nearly 19 and one is 17 and one is nearly 10. So I always looking at and how I'm blessed.
Yes.
Going through this, and I'm always think about 20 years reborn again.
Yes.
Otherwise I'd be dead 20 years ago, and I have this amazing bless that I can call my own.
Yes. Now you say that religion, Christianity, is an integral component of the West Papuan experience. Is that because that has allowed you to survive as a distinct group, or you've always been spiritually inclined?
So, like, where I'm from, we always, like, when I was growing up, my dad, you wouldn't say he's, like, Christian believer.
Right.
It's more connected to the nature.
Yes.
So how he do things is the nature tell him.
Right.
Which way to go, which what to do, and I always believe him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I brought up. However, when I engage with my friends, then I have to be feeding into that society. So it's two different things, but you have to balance it out in the between, yeah.
Right. Now, I understand. I mean, I had the privilege of being invited to the West Papuan Christmas gathering, which I attended for the first time. So you've got your own church or gathering place.
Yes, we do. We do. We have a church that we go to. The people who go there, they're coming from different dominants.
Mm-hmm.
But church is where you feel more connected in a way spiritually.
Spiritually, right.
But if you want the other way than the community is.
The community is there, so, so it plays a dual role.
Yes, so yeah. Both balancing it out.
So do you think you are welcome now?
After this, some still navigating.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Do you find people have no idea where you come from when you say you're from West Papua?
Most people think I'm from Papua New Guinea.
New Guinea, right.
So yeah. I'm like, thank you, but no, sorry.
Sorry. And what are your plans for the future?
Probably become, you know, like a social worker.
Social worker.
Yeah.
So you're studying now, are you?
I am. I'm trying, yes.
And how many years have you done?
One.
One. How many more years you've got to go?
Three.
You got another three. So you're working full-time or part-time?
It's full-time, but I drop down a day, so it's full-time.
Yeah. So why do you want to do social work?
It's like more and more... It's coming from my community and mm-hmm. my workplace.
Right.
I learn a lot what are the gaps and what are the resources that we can go through as a community, but yes. as a professional as well, what can I help in a way
right.
navigating the Australian system.
So it's 21 years later, you still want to make a contribution.
Yes, and here we are from... having education gaps
right.
to make this is something that I want to achieve, goal.
Well, that's extraordinary.
Yeah.
It's been a great honour and a privilege to speak to you.
Thank you.
I know it's taken me a while to get you into the studio, but it's worth it because I knew you had a very, it's not just a story, it's a lesson.
Yeah.
It's a lesson. People... You know, especially at the minute with the rise of what we describe as divided nation, where they think the other is the enemy,
yeah.
you know, it's very important that people who have made it come here as refugees, and you were refugees, came here with nothing, who now contribute to our society and part of our society, that you're heard, and more importantly than heard, that people understand the great suffering that drove you to leave your birthplace and come to this country and look for a new life. And I think a lot of people don't understand that about refugees and asylum seekers. And talking to you, and we're going to podcast, well, I'm not because I haven't got the skills, but Henrietta's going to podcast the program. And I think podcasting this program will be a great benefit to so many Australians or people living on this continent who have no idea about the atrocities and the genocide which is occurring 70 kilometres from the Australian coastline. That's less than the distance between Melbourne and Geelong.
Yeah.
And people have no idea.
Most people that I speak to in the community, they have no idea about West Papua at all. They think more about it's Papua New Guinea. So something that we need to put it out there and more awareness about.
Well, the fact is if the government won't do it and if other organisers won't do it, we have to do it. Well, you have to do it and we have to, and those of us that can assist will assist. Well, thank you very much
for coming. For having me.
No, it was a pleasure. And if you have any others of the 43 or 42 or 38, whatever's left, who want to come on the program, there's an open invitation. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. I'll recommend them.
Thank you. Thank you, Henrietta. We've got a minute to go. Well, I'm going to give you an invitation.
Yes.
This radio station, which has a West Papuan program.
Yes.
Right. Is having a 50th anniversary celebrations.
This year?
This year, on the 4th of July.
Yeah.
Which is Saturday.
Yes.
From 11 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Okay.
All right. At Collingwood Town Hall, which is just across the road.
Yep.
Punt Road, Collingwood Town Hall, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. I would like every... West Papuan, my personal invitation, I don't care about the rest of the group, I'm not a collectivist, I'm just joking, but a personal invitation to bring as many people to the party because the West Papuan program, like the East Timorese program that was here for years yep. and the Tamil program and the Sudanese program that's been here in the past, and the Somali program, they are programs that no other radio station would broadcast, and it's an honour to be able to share your story and your message and your plans for the future through the radio station. So please
Thank you for your input.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.